From Carolina down to Georgia, smell the jasmine and magnolia. Sleepy sweet home, Alabama, Roll Tide roll. Muddy water, Mississippi, blessed Graceland whispers to me.
Welcome back to the Jeff Moore Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Friday morning. What's left in this Friday morning? We still got 1, 2, 3 outstanding texts. Maybe we'll have time for after this segment before we end the program. But joining us now, we do this about this time every Friday, our returning champion, State Senator Chris Elliott. Senator, good morning. How you been?
I am doing great. Football season's here. I just wish the weather was here to go along with it.
That's not quite there. It ought to be nothing like those first 2-3 games where you're just suffering in the blasting sun.
That's it. And I want to get away from hurricane season too. We've not had to deal with that so far, and I'd like to get clear of that, and then we can get on with hunting season.
Yeah, just fall weather in general can't get here soon enough. Let's see here. You seem to have done a pretty good job of navigating or avoiding, I should say, a lot of national politics, just not having to keep up with it. It must be a good place to be, but you've still been busy. Before we get into any specifics, what's it been like so far?
Well, it's been a busy, you know, week just trying to keep track of our state government that tries to continue to grow and expand and leverage its bureaucratic power whenever the legislature's out of session. So it is a constant battle to try to keep the bureaucrats straight and in check and doing what they're supposed to do and what, you know, the laws the legislature passes. It amazes me at the constant, you know, just delay tactics and pushback and things like that just seem to happen. So you just have to stay on it. It's a full-time gig to try to get things actually done and try to keep them from expanding their power when we're not there in session to check them.
Or just flouting state law or recently passed state law, like, you know, and knowing damn well what the law is, but then playing ignorant or dumb and not really abiding by the law.
You see entirely too much of that, you know, and, oh, we didn't mean to do that, or, oh, I'm sorry, that's an oversight, or, oh, we knew full well that you passed that law, but we waited a month or a year and a month or a year and 6 months to actually get around to implementing it. And then those types of things just are aggravating to me and to my colleagues. I mean, the idea of a citizen legislature that meets for a short period of time is a good and tried and true, concept. The problem is we leave this entire professional political class behind us to essentially, do what they want to do with very little oversight. And it is tough to continue to try to exercise some authority or control over them while they are doing their own thing in our absence.
Well, just the culture of Montgomery, the environment, the landscape, and the governor doesn't help this at all, but just a such a low regard for you guys. And I feel like this, Senator, and not that I'm a proponent of a lot of legislative days or whatever, but when you talk in the hallways and you talk to people around town, I mean, they're just counting the days until signing die. Like they cannot wait for you guys to go home and they could get back to norm, what they would call normal. That's sort of what goes on in that town, that they don't really want like a proactive legislature changing how they do things.
No, and surely not. And you can't blame them, but they get, you know, you go back up for the Joint Transportation Committee, the Contract Review Committee, the ARPA Oversight Committee, the Sunset Committee, all these kind of checks and balances that we try to put in place to keep folks on track and keep folks straight. And they are. They're held in low regard and with disdain by, you know, a lot of folks in Montgomery. They just want to be left alone to do what their thing and increase their authority and power through, you know, the rulemaking process or just by obfuscating. It's exhausting. The legislature and me in particular spend just a lot of time trying to say, hey, come on, go do this. This is the law. You're supposed to enact this. You're supposed to do this. And it's not how it should work. It's not how it was designed, but all too often. That is how it works. And it requires a lot of legislative time to keep them on the right track.
I mean, guys, you ever want to see this, go to any random hearing on the Alabama channel on YouTube or wherever they stream it. And it's almost like they sneer at the legislature when you call these bureaucrats to, there's two approaches. There's sort of the standoffish approach, or there's just, they just kind of happy talk you guys. And sometimes that works, but a lot of times you see it, right? You know what's going on here. You're getting this charm offensive just to buy more time to continue on the path you're going down, even though it's the wrong path.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, you know, you see ARPA Oversight Committee meetings from the very inception, where I've, you know, queried ADECA about alternative, you know, methods for you know, getting rural broadband in place. And they're one word answers, right? They're yes, no extrapolation, no attempt at doing anything else. And they talk past each other in the media with op-eds, you know, or whatever else. And in the meantime, what do you get? You get a free market solution that solves the rural broadband problem. It's done. We don't have one in Alabama anymore. Yet they want to continue to do their thing and spend their money and move on. And it's just frustrating to see a lack of just awareness of what's going on outside of that bubble. And no matter what the legislature that comes from all over the state of Alabama tries to say, hey, y'all take a look at this. Hey, maybe you should think about this. Nope. It's the track we're on. It's what the bubbles wants to do, and that's where we're headed.
Well, talk about that a little bit, because you've been trying to sell, I mean, this on to your colleagues for a couple of years now. But this, the Skylink approach, or the Starlink approach, and Elon Musk, and like, look, the continue to lay fiber into the ground and get it out to these rural areas. But like, looking at the timeline, there's going to be end of the road, end of the dirt road places you're never going to get to. You need to start thinking about an alternative here, which is always met with some pushback, or like you said, some goofy op-ed about the virtues of why fiber is superior. And, you know, we know the talking points, but like the whole point is here, I don't think people realize like this is like a years, if not decades long process to do what they want to do at the state level. And you have a solution that maybe it's not a permanent solution. Even it's at least a fix to get internet in homes where it's needed.
Well, nothing's a permanent solution. It's technology based, right? I mean, you know, a telegraph wasn't a permanent solution. Fax machines weren't a permanent solution. Blackberries weren't a permanent solution. You know, all of this changes. And so if you're looking for a technology based solution that's permanent, it doesn't exist. And that's the nature of the beast. I just get frustrated sometimes with the lack of ability for them to think a little bit outside the box, right? And look, there's a reality. I don't have to sell my colleagues on this. I don't have to sell anybody on the fact that the rural internet problem in Alabama, in the United States, heck, in the world, is solved. It's solved right now for $299 and $120 a month. It's solved anywhere. Done. And so we can continue to have this debate, but people that need this, you know, this service, this broadband, it's there. And it's not any more complicated than that. Now, does the government get to take credit for it? No. Because the free market solved it. And guess what? That's okay. Heck, that's a good thing, right? That's what us limited government people want to see. Now, I'm not saying there's not a place for fiber, and I'm not saying that fiber is not needed in densely populated areas where actually Starlink doesn't work as well. But it's a big challenge for fiber to work in places that are sparsely populated where Starlink works great. So one's not the enemy of the other. Not by a long shot, but maybe we should spend our money that we have for fiber implementation in urban areas where the density requires it, and not in rural areas where, A, it's not going to do a whole lot of good because you're not reaching enough people, and B, it's not needed because the market fixed that problem.
Yeah, and whenever you bring this up, I mean, you just get eye rolls and pushback, right?
You know, so far, but I think, again, you're starting to see, I was in a meeting last night with young farmers, and I said, you know, we talked about rural broadband. And I said, how many of you have Starlink as an internet provider? And over half of them raised their hand and said, well, that's what we have. It works great. We've been waiting for it forever. We're so glad that it's here. It's changed our lives. Boom, done. It's just almost not even a conversation anymore. I just want to make sure when we roll out this $1 billion worth of funding that the feds have really pushed through because of the American Rescue Plan Act for fiber. And yes, it really can only be used on fiber, and that's fine. Let's just put it in places that it works. Let's not try to put it in a spot where it's going to be cost prohibitive. There's not the density for it. And again, the market has solved the broadband problem.
Joined by State Senator Chris Elliott here on the program. Senator, I don't know if you've been keeping track of it. I got a flood of texts yesterday. I don't really understand it completely, what's going on here. And some of your colleagues in the legislature, I mean, they're hard at work here, but pharmacy board stuff, the pharmacy, I guess my takeaway as well, this occupational licensing situation in this state, it's just a mess. You don't even know where to start. But on the pharmacy side, what did you make of what's going on here?
Well, I just was embarrassed by the leadership of the pharmacy board, both the staff level and the board itself. And I've had some direct conversations that were pretty tough with some of the board members who called after some of the statements I made and said, you know, we're really disappointed in what you said. And I said, well, I'm kind of disappointed in the leadership you've exerted here. We have these folks that are appointed to these boards that are supposed to provide direction to their executive director, their executive secretary, their staff. And when you see some of the problems that are outlined by the Examiner Public Accounts in their audit reports, it's just inexcusable. There's no other way to put it out there. And look, these board members are supposed to make sure that their staff members are doing things correctly. And that's their first and number one job. And if they're not, they need to find more staff. They need to find better staff members. And so, you know, for the past couple of years now, I've introduced legislation that has tried to consolidate the administrative functions of these boards to save money, one, but two, to make sure that they're run competently. And they're not somebody's, you know, little sacred cow piggy bank to go, you know, go play with and have their own little siloed fiefdom. And unfortunately, that happens all too often where there are these lavish trips and money that's, you know, missing or unaccounted for or misspent or put in the wrong bank accounts. I mean, anybody that's looked through those reports or seen those committees, how are we putting up with this nonsense in the state of Alabama? It is beyond me. And so you have a sunset committee that is really rolled up its sleeves, is doing the work it needs to do, but their options are limited, frankly, right? They can simply sunset a board and say, you don't exist anymore. We did that through legislation with the massage therapy board. And I think you'll see questions about whether or not that's what we need to do moving forward with some of these other boards is, do you need to abolish them and reconstitute them? Do you need to abolish them and get rid of them? Do you need to consolidate their administrative functions? All of those are options, and all of those are things that I, along with the Contract Review Committee, the Sunset Committee, will continue to look at as we head into the legislative session.
Well, I mean, isn't that the struggle here is like finding well, where do you, if you don't do it the way we're doing it, then you got to put it somewhere in government. Where do you put it? Now, your solution would be just a Secretary of State's office. They push back a little on it, but I mean, it doesn't really, some of these occupational licensing endeavors don't have a home.
Well, that's right. And so the question is, if they don't have a home, what happens to them? And they end up bidding out the administrative functions to some kind of halfway third party entity that usually ends up being a lobbyist, right? Who sees this as yet another profit center to operate these boards. It's just another, you know, another income source for them. And so they try to run these boards, but they do so poorly. And so the licensees suffer. It ends up being a barrier to workforce entry. And you end up with board members who are not, you know, policing and managing their executive staff correctly. And so, you know, for some of these smaller boards, yeah, there's probably some sort of kind of clearinghouse that needs to handle the administrative functions of the board. For some of the larger, more sophisticated boards, you probably just need more, you know, newer board members that actually are competent, capable, and willing to manage their staff and make sure that we don't have the audit findings that we're having right now, and to hold that staff accountable and make sure that when something goes wrong, you make a change at a leadership level. That's how things work in business. That's how things work in most of government. That's how things need to work with this occupational licensing boards as well.
Senator, we'll close it out on this. And yesterday I was listening to your colleague, Sam Gavan, talk about I-10. Here's what occurs to me. And this has probably been the historical talking point or whatever, of just how the state treats the coast or deals with the coast. But like, yes, there's an I-10 bridge that needs to be built. It's going to be very expensive. And yes, a lot of people from Louisiana or Florida or Mississippi or Texas are going to be using it. And the mindset is, well, why should it be paid for on the backs of Alabamians? But like, my response has always been this: look, the state has a coastline, and with that coastline, there are a lot of benefits, but there's also a lot of responsibilities. And look, it's going to cost more to maintain infrastructure in this coastline, just as it would in the mountains or any other place, as it would than it would in a lot of other parts of the state. And I just sometimes I wonder. I mean, maybe Senator Gavan's, speaking from his perspective as a Huntsville member, and probably speaking from the perception or the point of view of his constituents. But this idea that you just kind of you can't really focus on the coast, I think misses a bigger point.
Well, I think that if you take a step back and you look at it, the push and pull is not between north and south. It is between areas that are growing and areas that are shrinking or stagnant. Right. It is between the areas of the state that are economic drivers and areas of the state that are anemic. And unfortunately, when you start looking at a lot of the transportation spending that is advocated for by this administration, it is very much a Robin Hood approach. It is spend a little bit in certain areas, demand match money from local governments for state and federal projects. So you have counties and cities being forced to put money into a state project, whereas you go into areas like the Black Belt, and there's certainly no demands made of that. And you see way more money per capita, way more money in total being spent in areas like West Alabama, when you should be spending money in areas of the state, both north and south, that are generating revenue and making the pie bigger. That's how you grow a state's economy, not by investing in areas that are not generating economic wealth.
Senator, got to leave it there. As always, we appreciate your time. We'll do it again next week.
Thanks for having me. Y'all go enjoy some football this evening.
State Senator Chris Elliott. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5.